This is tape 8 of the PDH online course E341, NFPA 72-2010. Returning now to the narration that is the content of the course, testing requirements. Testing is critical to a reliable fire alarm system. This is especially true when the control element is a computer configured locally to meet the requirements of the authority having jurisdiction. This state, too, comes under the installing contractor's responsibility, not the designer's. The local authority having jurisdiction must certify the results, not the designer. Make the reference in the specification. Knox box. It's good for firefighters to be able to enter the building to determine if a fire exists or simply a false alarm. The almost universal solution is a very substantial small box at the door. The box contains a door key. The box can be opened by a key carried by the firefighters. The box can have a tamper switch connected to security or the fire alarm, but this is rare. Brand name and common designation is Knox box. Common errors in fire alarm design. The following is a list of comments by plans reviewers. Many jurisdictions use checklists, which they mostly guard. Dedicated panel breaker, red, locked, labeled fire alarm circuit. Panel ground. Smoke detector above panel. Missing pull stations within 5 feet of each personnel exit door. Missing pull station at each stair entry. Missing strobe horn or strobe speaker at each exit. Missing duct detector on large air handlers. Missing status test reset stations on hidden duct smoke detector. No strobe horn or strobe speaker in each bathroom. No flow switch on sprinkler zones or outside sprinkler bell. Initiating devices. A sketch similar to that below is valuable for conceptualizing of the smoke detector placement rules. The sketch illustrates the expected behavior of an undisturbed fire at the early stages. Now I'm going to try and read this graphic to you, but I'd like to reiterate the lead-in narration, which is more dense than it might appear. The sketch illustrates the expected behavior of an undisturbed fire at the early stages. There's a red flag there for anyone who's listening carefully. Expected behavior. Is it going to act like that? No, it's probably not. This is something they call typical, which never ever happens. It's kind of an average of all the extremes that will exist. There is some material burning. Each fire is very much responsive to the material being burning. If you've ever seen gasoline burn, it has a unique characteristic. If you've watched wood in your fireplace, it has a unique characteristic. Early in the fire is different than late in the fire. So anything we look at as representative has to have a very severe disclaimer associated with it, because it is only true for a moment of time. And not certainly not for every fire, certainly not for the same fire at different times during its existence. Another key word here, an undisturbed fire in the early stages. Fires and the products of combustion are very sensitive to smash out the wind current. If there is an open elevator shaft or something similar, there's going to be a chimney effect and a very substantial wind current. So this representative drawing is not representative except in the undisturbed state. And it also says at the early stages. And we're going to see that because we're trying to catch these fires at the early stages. That's the whole course. Get that alarm to ring during the early stages. But what happens if the fire develops quite a bit before it generates enough products of combustion to trip the smoke detector? Is the fire going to have the same characteristics as a fire at the early stages? And the answer is no. And again, there are different kinds of fires, those that grow slowly, those that grow rapidly. So with all those disclaimers, let's pretend we have a representative fire. Now, first thing you notice is it's an open space. We're not talking about a situation where there are columns. And I've never been in a building to nail. I should probably critique myself and think for a while. Yeah, I've been in a few auditoriums. I think the grocery store today had columns. But we're showing a picture of a place with no columns. It's totally undisturbed. No shelves. I mean, back to that grocery store. No desks. No cubicles. This is a wide open space. with a little pile of source material, which is on fire, and the smoke goes up, and it spreads out as it goes up. And you should have an intuitive sense of this, that it cools somewhat as it goes up. Obviously, the surface of the smoke plume in contact with the undisturbed air cools the most. The concentrated smoke plume is in contact with more concentrated smoke plume, so it stays hotter longer. What you have is the smoke goes up and out, and the lower edge of it cools and slows in contact with the air. So again, trying to visualize, you can't see my, I'm gesturing into the microphone. The smoke goes up and it spreads to the side as it interferes with the low ceiling. Low ceiling is an inherent part of this. Smoke products of combustion act differently with a high ceiling. But this is the concept we use for all of our thinking on these things. Now, architects worry a lot about open atriums, where you'll have an 8-story opening that looks a lot like a chimney to the uninitiated. And they worry about this considerably. You and I are not in a position to do that intelligently. We put in smoke detectors according to the rules and hope right and hope that there are some people around who can add some additional information. The field of fire science is now sufficiently mature that details of fire mechanics under a wide range of environments and influences can be accurately predicted. This sketch is the most simple representation. It's good for conceptual purposes, but lacks the detail available for analysis of real fires under real circumstances. And there are some large national engineering firms that have a fire science department that try to do a better job with their sprinklers and a better job with their fire alarms than I'm able to convey to you at all. This is an introductory course, so we know where to look in the book if we're just trying to follow the rules. Their narration of the NFPA 72 handbook makes clear that the code does not require a fire alarm or particular form of installation. Local law or interpretation require the fire alarm. The code tries to force a functional, reliable installation after the decision has been made. For years, the code body has been trying to remove opportunities for local authorities to gut the code. However, the requirements and enforcement are still local. Must support initiating devices separately of their connections. The reason I mention this is somehow every time I end up doing a search for fire alarms, I come across publications from the Association of Fire Chiefs and things like this, and they're all, and inspectors, they're always complaining about smoke detectors hanging by their connection wires. And I know why this is, because I see them everywhere I go. I do a lot of building inspections for various reasons, and it's totally common to see a smoke detector hanging from its wires. Now again, what does that have to do with the design engineer? Probably nothing. Our product is pencil on paper. We're trying to tell the contractor what to do right. But if you get to the stage where you're inspecting a construction job, this is something to look for. It is so very common for contractors to remove smoke detectors temporarily and not replace them, or remove the ceiling panels and leave the smoke detector hanging from its wires. You won't believe how many smoke detectors are temporarily hanging by their connection wire for years and years. This happens above drop ceilings, where drop ceiling tiles have been removed, and under raised computer floors. It's not legal, but typically no enforcement exists after acceptance of the original installation. It's also a violation of the National Electric Code. Total coverage, all rooms, halls, storage areas, basements, attics, lofts, spaces above suspended ceilings, and all accessible spaces, including closets, elevator shafts, enclosed airways, dumbwaiter shafts, and chutes, must have smoke or heat detectors. Inaccessible spaces without combustible materials do not require coverage. Smoke detectors are not required in the above ceiling plenum spaces if duct detectors are used and no flammable materials exist in the above ceiling space. Selective coverage. If only a portion of the building is protected, then that portion must meet all the requirements of the code. Owners are always asking for just a little fire protection. If this is acceptable to the authority having jurisdiction, the area protected must still comply with all the details of the code. Heat sensing fire detectors. NFPA 72 lists different technologies, and the code accepts new technologies that meet the detailed requirements. It's essential that all devices carry UL labels and are installed according to their UL listings, especially regarding environment and any other limitations. Now, critiquing what I just said, there is a new term that's starting to creep into electrical specifications, nationally recognized testing laboratory. I don't really know what's going on here, so again, I'm elaborating on things I don't know but suspect. I think somebody's got a bug in their bonnet that Underwriters Laboratories is a monopoly, and let's go after them, and let's have somebody with a garage operation or working out of their base who can qualify products in place of Underwriters Laboratories. Now, I'm telling you, as a working registered professional engineer who puts my seal on drawings, I won't accept anything except Underwriters Laboratories. I've had a few people come up to me and twist my arm and make me change the words to nationally recognized testing laboratory, but I'm very uncomfortable about that, and I urge you, as a friend to a friend, one professional to another, UL does good work. If they make mistakes, they are supremely competent at hiding it. You won't get fired for specifying UL. Unless, of course, you're working for one of these work-out-of-their-basement outfits and he's the owner. Heat detector rated linear spacing not greater than 50 feet. Now, I copied this out of the code. I mean, the purpose of this course is to know what the code says. The code says you can't have heat detectors greater than 50 feet apart. I told you before, use 30 feet center to center, and I still think that's normal spacing, and I think you will always be happy with 30 foot center to center spacing. Book says 50. There are fine print opportunities to save money all through the book. If that's your choice, you're going to have to chase it on your own. I'm warning you that it does exist. I'm telling you that the safe answer is 30 feet center to center. Ceiling heat detectors not within 4 inches of the wall. Also, wall heat detectors must not be within 4 inches of the ceiling. There's some hassle going on about this now, about how they're reading the detectors. I think if you follow this rule, you will not get into trouble. Solid joist construction. Space heat detectors 50% that of a smooth ceiling spacing, that is 15 feet center to center. Heat ceiling. Do not place detectors within 3 feet of the peak. Do place detectors within 3 feet of the peak, but not at the peak. Very high ceilings. Now, this is part of the warning I was giving you on the typical graphic. At 20 feet, detector spacing should be reduced from 30 feet to 18 feet. So you see, a 10-foot office ceiling is what they're thinking of when they're talking about this stuff. 20-foot ceiling is not a high ceiling. Very common in old schools that are being renovated. But the spacing for heat detectors is reduced from 30 feet to 18 feet. At 30 feet, it should be reduced to 10 feet on centers. That's a lot of detectors. There is research that the smoke plume cools so much as it rises that reliable detector operation is not possible above 30 feet. And there's considerable attention being paid to open atriums, now popular in commercial buildings and homes. Smoke detector environmental limits. Most detectors carry limits of 32 to 100 degrees F and humidity below 93% and altitude limits. Beware Denver, Colorado. Note that you cannot put smoke detectors where exposed to freezing, high temperature, high humidity, or substantial airflow. Smooth ceiling. Use the 30-foot center-to-center nominal smoke detector rating. By the way, you may have caught something there and it may have raised an eyebrow. I don't distinguish very clearly between smoke detectors and heat detectors. As I read the code, very nearly identical requirements apply, 30 foot center to center. Air sampling smoke detector. This is an unusual thing, and I want to share two viewpoints on it. One viewpoint good, the other viewpoint bad. The guy that says it's good is the local fire marshal. He said he's had some real awkward installations, and the designer put in an air sampling smoke detector, solved all the problems, and boy, were they happy. Now, the other guy that says bad is Tom. An air sampling smoke detector is exactly the same as an air sampling toxic gas detector. You buy an air sampling toxic gas detector in industry where you've got a number of locations where there is an opportunity for a toxic gas spill. So you want to put a sensor, but you really don't want to put a sensor in there. You don't want to send a guy in there to do maintenance in a hazardous area. So you run a tube in and you suck a little bit of gas out of it. And as long as the gas is clean, everybody's happy. When the gas is nasty, then it rings an alarm. You check where the little clicky thing was that was choosing which sample you're looking at, and that's the one that goes into alarm. Now that's a hazardous gas detector, and I like it a lot for hazardous gas. I don't like it for a smoke detector because I don't quite buy this idea that we've got places that are so hazardous that we don't want to put a standard smoke detector in and have the guy go in and service it. I'm telling you, the authority having jurisdiction said, do it, Tom. And I'm telling you, Tom has reservations on it. And this is one of those situations where you recognize there's a little bit of controversy. You've got to decide where your comfort level lies. Maybe you'll decide that this is the time to talk to your local authority having jurisdiction. Projected beam smoke detectors. They must be located and installed per the manufacturer's instructions, like all other initiation devices. They're very appropriate for large spaces as warehouses, big box stores, auditoriums, and non-dust factories. They will not fall strip easily, but are sensitive to a genuine smoke plume. Raised floors and suspended ceilings. These should be treated as separate rooms. In theory, sensors are required only where flammables are present. In fact, there are often requirements for the sensors, even when plenum rated cables are used. Keep smoke detectors away from HVAC supplier return grills. The airspeed will exceed the manufacturer's installation instructions and they won't work. Detection of other suppression systems. The fire alarm must know about trouble or activation of water, foam, gaseous discharge, and other suppressants. Is this redundant? Yes, we've mentioned this many times throughout the course, but it's important. I mean, the reason the architect and the owner are willing to spend money on a standalone suppression system is they're expecting trouble there and they want to avoid it. So with the expectation of trouble there, we want to make sure that the building fire alarm is responding properly to it. The first step is to record what happens, because after the event, it may be the only record of when the alarm came in. I don't know how much computers they put in these standalone systems. When I've looked at them, it looks like it's an empty box, maybe a relay in it. I mean, it's not a sophisticated computerized system. Now, again, technology advances. That may not be the way they are today. When I've had the chance to open the cover, that's what I've seen, however. Pole stations must be installed throughout the protected area so that they are conspicuous, unobstructed, and accessible. Often owners and architects are offended by the aesthetics of pole stations and notification device. Concealed until use notification devices are acceptable, but pole stations must be visible and prominent. By the way, I saw some strange coloring on pole station the other day. I would say 99.something% of the pole stations are red or red and white. And I saw some strange colored ones the other day. If I pulled out my digital camera, I'll bet I took a picture of it. This is something very sensitive to the local authority having jurisdiction. I know that Chicago and New York are famous for having different colored exit lights. Wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of communities that think they'll put their mark on reality by specifying a different color. I don't like this at all. To me, fire alarm should be simple and reliable. Changing it from red to green is not simple. Green, to me, is not a good idea when you're in a panic situation. NFPA 72 Handbook contains discussions of plastic covers and covers with sounders to reduce false alarms. The general consensus is that these devices materially increase the safety of the installation in vandalism-prone locations. Sprinkler flow switches. These are normally termed flow switches and match this description. However, pressure switches can be used, alarming on reduced pressure associated with flow. Also, pressure switches are required on sprinkler systems with a jockey or booster pump. One pressure switch initiates the pump, another alarms if pressure is not maintained. Fire pumps are closely regulated by a separate NFPA publication and are not addressed here. Duct smoke detectors. Other codes require duct smoke detectors and specify their locations. NFPA 72 specifies details of construction and installation details. In general, the electrical designer conveys the location to the fire alarm detail designer and vendor. Occasionally, retrofit installations or extremely small construction jobs require that the electrical designer take responsibility for choosing the part number of the device and identifying the location on the duct for installation. This is non-trivial. Duct detectors come with different sampling tubes for different duct sizes, and there are rules on the distance from the fan to the detector. The detector and status test reset station are fairly straightforward. It's sometimes difficult to get detailed product information, so a local salesman or national customer support office is required. As with other design steps, make a formal call report identifying the contact number in person and information obtained, and put the report in the project file. Evacuation is not a required result of alarm operation. Note that this is not an exception to the installation requirements, just an exception to the notification requirements, or actually a detail in the procedure of programming the fire alarm control unit. Any such exception requires explicit approval from the authority having jurisdiction. For instance, the evacuation of a prison is often not the first choice, even to the enclosed exercise yard. It is preferable to move residents to an area of safe refuge. Now, please focus on this term, area of safe refuge. This is a very powerful concept that the architect will have strong feelings on. I'm not smart on this, but I know that it exists, and I want to at least share as much as I do know. Architects get into situations where they know there's a hazard and they are hard put to find a way to evacuate. So what they do is they set up an area with firewalls so that the area doesn't burn down even if the rest of the building burns down. Now, when I first got into this, it was stairwells. If you ever watch construction, they put up the stairwell with a lot of concrete block, and then they put up a lot of flimsy stuff for the rest of the building. Well, the reason for the heavy concrete block around the firewall is people can go in there, and even if they're in a wheelchair and can't go down the steps, they wait on the landing, and they're pretty safe. The firewall keeps the fire from causing the thing to crumble around them, and the fire door into the stairwell keeps the products of combustion from going in, and that becomes an area of safe refuge. Now, architects can do a lot more than just use a stairwell for this. And the concept I was just conveying about the fire wall and the fire door, that's how the architects do this. But that's what is supposed to be going on in a hospital or jail or rest home or something like that, where you really don't want to try to move everybody out. So what you try to do is have enough space in the facility that you can have one corner of it burned down and have everybody else move to the other side of the firewall. Area of safe refuge in a sidebar notation. This is an extremely important concept in life safety for fire alarms and the newly recognized hazard of toxic spills, terrorism, and natural disasters. It's been in the life safety code, NFPA 101, for a long time. It's gained prominence with the acceptance of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA and ADAAG. If cell block A reports a fire, the guards can acknowledge the alarm and move the residents to the library or cafeteria. The danger to be recognized is the smoke and toxic fumes released by the fire. The prison design I worked on also included the option of activating notification devices and releasing magnetic locks on outside doors. All prison doors are normally operated electrically using well-protected circuit conductors. In sidebar, for instance, in hospital intensive care units and convalescent wards, it may be more dangerous to the patients and their intravenous feeding units and monitoring equipment to move the patients and their intravenous feeding and monitoring units than to shut off the fans and keep them in their beds. This is clearly a question for the authority having jurisdiction and the HVAC designer. Now, what I'm saying here is, if the authorities involved have decided that it's safer to keep them in the beds, you don't want strobe horns going on next to that bed. That's just not good design. For instance, in high-rise apartments, especially senior citizen public housing, evacuation may be impossible. The scenario was examined in a previous section on voice notification. It's common to evacuate the adjacent units. Sometimes the floor with the fire and the floor above and the floor below are evacuated. These decisions are made before submissions for plans review and requests for the building permit. And as in all cases, they end up according to the final discretion of the authority jurisdiction. Let's take a break now and come back and talk about fire alarm system requirements.